from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've probably heard about this already, but there's a fine coating of ash all over Southern California at this point in time. For example, here at the Le Chaux Dome, there's a fine coating of ash. We're miles away from any fires. But the winds, you see, the winds, the mighty winds. Oop, plug. So I probably have a fine coating of ash, which is definitely one of the problems with visibility at the Le Chaux Dome today. The other is that we're in the auxiliary Le Chaux Dome, the one that they forgot to put lights in. So to the listener in Australia who says, for a trained broadcaster, you make a lot of reading mistakes. Just you wait, bud. Just you wait. And now this just in, a new feature of our program, spotlighting things you'd never know if somebody hadn't paid a lot of money to an official to give a speech. This week's entry, CIA Director Michael Hayden this week addressed a Washington meeting of the Atlantic Council of the United States. Probably a hefty fee ensued. It's an international relations group. And he suggested that Osama bin Laden... Now listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. This just in. The CIA director suggests that Osama bin Laden is hiding somewhere in the remote Afghanistan-Pakistan border region, where Al-Qaeda has regrouped and bolstered its organization, according to the CIA director. Why didn't anybody tell me this before now? Thank God the Atlantic Council of the United States paid him the money. Otherwise, we'd never know that Osama bin Laden is hiding, where he's been hiding for the last 7 years. Now, you know that on Monday, American Express requested and received, in lickety-split record time, approval to change itself from whatever it is up to now, you know, American Express, to a bank holding company. Why, you would ask? Oh, also, American Express Travel-Related Services is a bank holding company, too, despite its name. This allows American Express, in the words of its chief executive, to be best positioned to take advantage of the various programs the federal government has introduced or may introduce to support U.S. financial institutions, i.e. dollars, money, baby. Well, you know, it speaks well of American Express. At least they know where the money is, like Willie Sutton. And at the end of the week, not to be outdone, Hartford Insurance is going to try to turn itself into a savings and loan to gain access to federal funds aimed at shoring up the banking sector. They're all doing it. Before that, of course, a couple of the surviving brokerage houses changed themselves into bank holding companies to be eligible for federal aid to banks. GM hasn't changed itself into a bank yet, but GMAC did. So at this point, all I can say, ladies and gentlemen, is hello, welcome to the Le Chaux National Bank.
Now is the time. Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And due respect to the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers.
Make this land a better land in the world in which we live.
And help each man be a better man. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can. Yes, we can. Why can't we if we want to? Yes, we can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that we can.
I know we can make it if we try.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can. Yes, we can. Great gosh almighty.
Each man be a better man with the kindness that you give.
well, we can work it out.
Oh, yes, we can. I know we can. Yes, we can. Great gosh almighty. Yes, we can. I know we can.
From the home of the homeless, from the edge of America, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And let's fight euphoria. What do you say? The rumors around Washington this weekend are that Barack Obama is seriously thinking about Hillary Clinton for his Secretary of State. Many news agencies point out that there's a plethora, thank you, of, well, it's public radio. What do you think? A plethora of former Clinton officials already staffing the Obama transition teams. So you vote, it's vote for one, get two? Really? Again? Three this time. See, that's the change. And among the former Clintonistas back in the saddle is Rahm Emanuel, who was White House counsel, of counsel to the White House, you see. He gave counsel during the Clinton administration, then left, made $16 million in 2 years on Wall Street. So he's one of the good guys. Then ran for Congress because, you know, he's gotten all the money he's going to get out of Wall Street. Where do you go next? Like Willie Sutton, where the money is. Famous bank robber of the 30s, in answer to the question that some of you have. And now he's chief of staff. Well, he's not a chief of staff elect because he wasn't elected. Chief of staff select in the Obama administration. But, you know, before your euphoria goes entirely out, let me just say, Rahm Emanuel is a perfect centrist, ladies and gentlemen. Just, you know, if you want to bridge between the two sides, he is a perfect centrist. Because one of his brothers teaches bioethics at a university, and the other brother teaches Hollywood ethics on the street. It's a perfect, perfect midpoint that he's at. And his dad, by the way, do you know this? Rahm Emanuel's dad was, before he went into business as a pediatrician, God love him, was a member of the Irgun, I-R-G-U-N, look it up. The gun part is probably more persuasive than the ear part, but Irgun. They were militias in pre-Israel Israel. Check their website. Anyway, keep your euphoria, you know, banked. Ladies and gentlemen, this is an educational program. That's why it's on public radio. So I read you this letter from a listener, dear Harry, from Jean. And I think it's a female Jean from the spelling. But it could be male. Jean Shepherd spelled his name that way. I could waste another hour on that. Dear Harry, I laughed as hard as anyone at you riff on the name Alibaba Khan, all the while remembering two things. When I was in Turkey in 2003, I was on several occasions introduced to middle-aged men called Alibaba. Eventually, I twigged to the fact that they were indeed the Baba, i.e. father, of someone named Ali, to whom I'd been introduced minutes earlier. I also recalled that in Iran, and perhaps elsewhere in the Middle East or the Muslim world, the suffix John attached to a male person's name didn't mean he was a customer of... No, meant a display of fondness or respect, something like that. I do not know either Turkish or Farsi. I was farsighted for a moment there. But I do know that Turkish, written in Roman letters, uses the letter C for the sound J. Thus, the name you had such delightful sport with would have been translated as a respectful way to address the father of Ali. And another listener says it is indeed pronounced Ali Babajan. Addressing a parent using the relationship plus the child's name, I believe, is called technonymy and is especially common in the Middle East. One good reason to bomb him. Thank you, Gene. Thank you very much. You know where I'm going to put that? I'm going to deposit that in the Le Show Bank. Because that way, it gains interest. That's going to pay off. Maybe never. Now, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, before we do the... I hate to do that, but there is something that that should take precedence before the apologies of the week this week. There is a broadcast on what I guess would be the equivalent of public television in Australia, except that people down there actually watch it, called the ABC, not like our ABC, because people actually watch it. The Australian ABC is having a program Monday night of this week in which both the former Prime Minister John Howard and the former Chief of the Defence Staff in Australia, I guess he would have been there, Rumsfeld, are interviewed. And they gave us a couple of clips in advance, which might be of interest, ladies and gentlemen. Here they are.
Now is the time.
No, here they are.
John Howard has told the program that the most difficult decision he took was the one that sent Australian troops to Iraq. He says Iraq's track record suggests that it might hand over weapons of mass destruction to terrorist groups.
That was a view that I had. It was a view that Tony Blair had. And it was a view that some of the intelligence people had, not all of them, but some of them.
Some.
The then head of the Defence Force, Chris Barry, has told it he didn't see compelling evidence.
I have to say, even up until the day I retired, I never saw any evidence that said suddenly we had to go off and do a job in Iraq.
Hmm. All right then. Now they tell us. Candidates, perhaps, in the fullness of time, for the apologies of the week. See how it worked? Or didn't?
So sorry.
So first of all, on MSNBC, Joe Scarborough, the morning host, was talking about Rahm Emanuel. We were just talking about here. See how it all weaves together? Seamless. And about Emanuel's reputation for brusqueness and profanity. And Scarborough was advocating that perhaps there were equally well-qualified people with a better temperament who might serve in the new administration. And then he said,
these are good, decent, steady men that don't go around flipping people off or screaming "fuck you" at the top of their lungs. I suggest that you missed the Jay Carney story. Now, that was the Jay Carney story.
I didn't use the word.
Honey.
So Mike. Although, let me call a timeout.
Yeah.
Did
there
I?
You go.
Yes.
No, you meant to say the letter.
Say what
Hold
you
on.
Said.
Come to mommy right here. You meant
I may
to
have been
say
the one on Ambien. If I actually said the word instead, did I say the word or did I say what Jay Carney
you
said?
Meant to say the letter, but we should clarify and apologize if everyone heard
the
it
the letter.
That way.
Jay Carney had told a story earlier about a conversation.
Didn't use the word, but it was off air.
And, yeah.
Fine. Okay, apologize, move on.
So I repeated, so great apologies if I said the word instead of the letter.
If. Doesn't count, Joe, if. We all heard it. Dateline Chicago, President-elect Barack Obama's White House Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel. This is seamless. Apologized to the Arab American community this week for remarks his father made to an Israeli newspaper. Benjamin Emanuel talked about his son Rahm's new job and told the Israeli daily Ma'ariv that obviously he'll influence the president to be pro-Israel. Why wouldn't he? What is he, an Arab? He's not going to be mopping floors at the White House. Unquote, Benjamin Emanuel. That prompted, surprisingly, an outcry from the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, which called on Rahm to condemn the unacceptable smear. Emanuel did call the group's president, Mary Rose Oakar, to apologize on behalf of his family. These are not the values upon which I was raised or those of my family, the group quoted him as saying. She said the apology was accepted. Emanuel spokesman Nick Pappas confirmed the phone call. Said Emanuel offered to meet with representatives of the Arab American community at an appropriate time in the future. How's the 12th of never? Republican Congressman Paul Bruhn is sorry for calling President-elect Barack Obama a Marxist and comparing him to Adolf Hitler, the Georgia congressman said this week. I regret putting it that way. I apologize to anyone who has taken offense at that. He did admit to calling the future commander-in-chief a Marxist at a recent Rotary Club meeting. It said Obama has expressed support for policies similar to those of Hitler. What, he wants the trains to run on time? Oh, that was Mussolini. It may sound a bit crazy and off base, but the thing is, he's the one who proposed the National Security Force, he told the AP. A room full of academics erupted in angry boos, not moos, boos, this week after political analyst Michael Barone, he's not a newcomer to the apology file, said journalists trashed Sarah Palin because, quote, she did not abort her Down syndrome baby, unquote. Barone said later in an email that he was attempting to be humorous. Okay, Mike, I'll do political analysis, okay? Georgia by 4. I mean, the Bulldogs. And he admitted he went over the line. The liberal media attacked Sarah Palin because she did not abort her Down syndrome baby, he said, according to accounts by attendees. They wanted her to kill that child. I'm talking about my media colleagues with whom I've worked for 35 years. Yeah, sounds real humorous. The ribs, they ache. About 500 people were in the room and some walked out. Sorry for that, Barone said in his email. Hey, it's been a while since we had a Catholic priest apologize, hasn't it? Yeah, I missed them. Well, Dateline Spokane, former priest Patrick O'Donnell apologized again this week, this time through his lawyer via phone call in front of a judge in Spokane to the victims of his rampant sexual abuse, according to the Seattle Times. Rampant sexual abuse. The apology, along with an agreement to pay $5 million, enables O'Donnell to avoid a looming civil trial over the sexual abuse scandal that bankrupted the Diocese of Spokane. Who knew? I think we did. The 24 people who sued him don't expect to recover much money. He worked as a psychologist after he left the priesthood. He says he has few assets. Well, yeah, I suppose. He says he has few assets that can be seized to pay the judgment against him. His victims believe O'Donnell does have money, but disguised it or routed it to family members over the years in anticipation of legal actions. How about having O.J. pay it? Maybe O'Donnell's been signing autographed footballs all these years. You see what I'm saying? Police never arrested him because the statute of limitations on his rampant child sexual abuse had expired. He quit molesting boys, he says in his deposition in the fall of 1980, in part because he almost died that year of an illness. Okay. That's a good reason. It's a good reason to stop anything. And because parents complained. Today, he lives in a comfortable home in the quiet Puget Sound community of La Conner, Washington, and has acknowledged he can't remember the names of the boys he molested. You know, so many boys, so little time. Sarah Palin was on Larry King Live, where she was asked whether she had cost McCain the election. I personally don't think that I, Sarah Palin from Alaska, the VP pick, I don't believe that I caused the outcome to be what it was. But if I caused even one person to shy away from electing an American hero, John McCain, to the presidency, then I apologized there, she said. Chinese authorities may revise production standards for animal feed after excessive levels of melamine were found in eggs exported to Hong Kong. This industrial chemical has been at the heart of the tainted milk scandal. It's made tens of thousands of Chinese children ill. Current rules in China set no limit for melamine content in animal feed. It's added, according to some reports, to make products score higher on protein content than they otherwise would in China, you see. The chairman of a dairy company in China, the company is called Han Wei. The chairman is Han Wei. He apologized for the most recent incident in Hong Kong where eggs were seized. We solemnly apologize to consumers and distributors. Solemn apology. See? Now you're talking. Joe, no if, solemn. Nice. Simple. We solemnly state that my company never had purchased melamine or added melamine to feeder products. No one asks for protein levels in eggs, so there's no need for us to add melamine to our eggs, he said. We bear an undeniable responsibility for it. Han said his company discovered the chemical in chicken feed in September and immediately stopped using it. Oh, and the poor chickens. No, they probably had different feed. Chicken feed, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking chicken feed. Officials at a gun and lock shop in Traverse City, Michigan, fired an employee for flying the American flag upside down as a political statement and using a racist slur to describe President-elect Obama. He's out, said Jack Fellows, salesman at Hempel, after firing Rod Nyland. And we've taken actions to apologize to the community for his action. Carl Hempel, the owner, said, "It's a huge embarrassment for me, and I take this personally. I'm a Hempel." The executive director of Missouri's lottery system apologized to players this week, a week after software glitches caused some lottery tickets to not be paid correctly. Sorry. It's not Missouri, it's South Carolina, and it would be Missouri anyway. He said a myriad of problems. Ooh, that's too many to deal with. A myriad of problems, according to Ernie Pasaleg, head of the lottery. A myriad of problems surfaced last week, but have since been fixed. So it's not too many to fix. A myriad. That sounds like a lot. I wouldn't want to take on a myriad. I'd need a partner. He said the problem stemmed for the installation of a new software system. Several women have claimed that underwear from the leading lingerie firm Victoria's Secret made them ill. One woman claims to have been left permanently scarred after wearing the Angel's Secret Embrace bra. This woman said she had welts that were very red, hot to the touch, extremely inflamed, blistery, itching profusely. She filed a lawsuit against Victoria's Secret, said she has been contacted by dozens of women suffering similar symptoms, who are now seeking to join a class action. A medical website here has been flooded with complaints against Victoria's Secret. The plaintiffs claim the tests revealed the bra showed traces of formaldehyde. They believe Ms. Ritter, Roberta Ritter, the plaintiff, may be allergic to formaldehyde. A spokesman for Victoria's Secret has denied formaldehyde is used to produce its bras. We have strict quality controls around our products, and we do not use formaldehyde in our bras, the company said in a statement. We are sorry that a small number of people have had an issue. Customer safety and satisfaction are always our primary concerns. Really? That's not what I get from the Victoria's Secret TV special every year. You probably want to brag on that a little bit more. And finally, at times, fighting tears, former U.S. Representative Mark Foley. On the other hand, it wouldn't get any ratings if it was the Victoria's Secret customer safety show, would it? Former U.S. Representative Mark Foley repeatedly apologized for letting down his family, friends, and constituents, but refused to be classified a pedophile in his first interview since resigning from office before the 2006 elections. It hits me right in the gut because it's absolutely false and incorrect. I never had sex with a child. I never had sex with a minor. A pedophile who is somebody who is having sex with a prepubescent person. I mean, that is an outrage to be called that. Foley stepped down after the publication of sexually laced email exchanges with underage male congressional pages. He described the past 2 years as humiliating, mortifying, and embarrassing. Now involved in real estate. All right, then. In Florida real estate. And just the right time, too. With his longtime partner, a Palm Beach dermatologist. It's perfect, isn't it? He dismissed accusations, did Foley, that he was using the emails to solicit for sex. But he apologized for letting down his family, friends, and constituents. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. You bet. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
She said, I know what it's like to be dead. I know what it is to be sad. And she's making me feel like I've never been wrong. I said, put all those things in your head. Things that make me feel that I'm mad. And you're making me feel like I've never been wrong. She said, you don't understand what I said. I said, no, 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 you're wrong. When I was a boy, everything was right. Everything was right. I said, even though you know what you know, understand what I said. I said, no, 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 you're wrong. When I was a boy, everything was right. Everything was right. I said, even though you know what you know, I know that I'm ready to leave.
Has had to hunt for his food. Now, in the enlightened 21st century, he has to chase after it. When it needs to be stabbed, he scoops. When it needs to be scooped, he stabs. And all the while, the danger of hunger increases, minute by minute. It's just a matter of time before the hunter becomes the hunted. From a historic collaboration between the Discovery Channel and the Food Network comes a week-long series about man's struggle to get food from plate to mouth and how modern technology is heightening the peril.
And yet again, the morsel eludes his grasp. This human would be better off tackling his food barehanded.
They are the most relentless of foes. They never bend. They never break. And in the wrong hands, they are hunger's greatest ally. Spork Week, starting December 6th, only on Discovery Food. Dare your satellite or cable provider to not let you see it. Spork Week on Discovery Food. The adventure of eating. The eating of adventure.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. Oh, yes, it is. Don't you naysay me. This is from a trade website called Ars Technica, about technical stuff, and I'll read it for you. It's about the digital wonderland, won't you? The Federal Communications Commission has authorized a fix that it hopes will resolve a potentially big digital television transition glitch. Really? Now they tell us. Television stations whose digital broadcast area will be smaller or different than their analog area. The solution is called a distributed transmission system, DTS, essentially an array of digital transmitters spread out over the signal area as opposed to one signal tower. The order doesn't require any TV station to use the system. And as one commissioner noted, the rulemaking comes pretty late in the digital TV day, a little over 3 months shy of switch-off time. Plus, the commission worries that DTS might lead to broadcast practices that under certain circumstances could make things worse. The biggest problem that came up during the trial run of the digital transition in Wilmington, North Carolina in September was that some viewers of one TV station, WECT, can't say call letters without doing that, lost service even though they'd installed set-top box converters for their analog receivers. In fact, one-third of the health calls that public service agencies got on DTV Day related to that snafu because WECT's digital broadcast area is smaller than its analog broadcast area. Who knew? The FCC hopes that the new fix will provide broadcasters with the precision necessary to avoid repeating that mistake. It allows them to apply for a waiver to use the technology to reach all of their old analog viewers. DTS should make it easier to reach digital TV watchers who live in hilly or mountainous areas. But the authorization comes with strings attached, most notably a prohibition on cherry-picking, which would be using DTS to favor service to some areas over others. Now, why would you want to do that? Existing viewers, says the order, including those in sparsely populated areas, rightly will expect to receive television service regardless of the technology employed by the station. Sparseness, you see. It wouldn't be the income level of some areas, would it? Several commissioners worried about how many broadcasters will actually avail themselves of DTS in the near future. Even licensees who are interested in it are unlikely to be able to construct facilities before the deadline for the switchover, says Commissioner Robert McDowell. I therefore renew my call for broadcasters to work diligently to inform their viewers about any technical issues that may affect over-the-air reception in their communities. And Michael Copps, a harsh critic of U.S. digital television planning, even though he's on the FCC, lamented the FCC had not identified coverage challenges sooner and acted accordingly. Would a truly comprehensive and coordinated DTV effort have identified these issues earlier? Copps asked rhetorically. We will never know for sure. What we do know is that in the absence of such an effort, we never gave ourselves a chance. But wait, there's more about the digital changeover once I finish reading the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. A couple notes from listeners on the subject. First, because we do give... It's fair and balanced here. Of course it is. Dear Harry, I know you have lots of reservations about how digital TV will play out for over-the-air viewers. Let me pass on my experience. This is from Dave in San Francisco. That's Hilly. 3 years ago, I bought a digital TV without a tuner, but with an integral DVD player. I bought a digital Motorola tuner on eBay and a WineGuard antenna. I had great reception. Total cost for the system, about $900. Then about 14 months later, I wanted the TV near my exercise bike, so I bought another set for about $300 from Costco. Also worked great and had an integral digital tuner. I was very happy. Now I'm approaching the digital conversion as follows. The Toshiba will get its own antenna. The one from Costco will keep its existing antenna, and I have a big screen Toshiba that will share the second antenna. I also have a Sony DVR, paid $200. This stuff works great. I pay nothing per month, no cable fees or anything else, and everything comes in clear as a bell, and I can pause live TV and record and time shift and playback while recording. The only caveat is that I live just over a mile from a major transmitting site, so if you're farther away, you may need a bit bigger antenna for similar results. But if you do your homework, it will be worth it, unless you're out in the desert and need a dish antenna. Your listener, Bubba Frisco Dave. On the other hand, now that went in the bank. Dear Harry, James from Canada, an American living there. I work in the digital TV industry, he writes. You're the only media I have heard who's reported what is really going on. As a person working on these technologies, I find myself believing we're creating solutions to no known problems. The demand for our services comes from government mandates rather than from consumer demand. The entertainment industry seems to be driving the government and operate from a position of extreme paranoia about their content getting out. Well, that's entertainment business ethics, sir. There's a class you can take in that. Instead of demanding a transition to HD, if the government instead published and enforced standards and fair use, everyone would be happier. The industry would be consumer-driven and thus spend time making things consumers wanted instead of forcing complex technologies down their throats that they don't want. The industry would have reasonable digital rights management that would protect creators of content. James, software engineer from Canada. He pays your money, ladies and gentlemen, and you takes your chances.
Hear the sledges with the bells, silver bells. What a world of merriment their melody foretells. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night. All the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight. Keeping time, time, time with a sort of runic rhyme. With the tintinabulation that so musically wells. From the bells, 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 bells. From the jingling and the tinkling of the bells. Hear the mellow wedding bells, golden bells. What a world of happiness their harmony foretells. Through the balmy air of night, how they ring out their delight. Through the dances and the yells and the rapture that impels. How it dwells on the future, how it tells. With the swinging and the ringing of the molten golden bells. Of the bells, 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 bells. Hear the loud alarm bells, brazen bells. What a tale of terror now their turbulency tells. Much too horrified to speak, oh, they can only shriek. For all the ears to know how the danger ebbs and flows. Leaping higher, higher, higher in a desperate desire. In a clamorous appealing to the mercy of the fire. The bells, 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 bells. With the clatter and the clanging of the bells. Hear the tolling of the bells, iron bells. What a world of solemn thought.
Getting close to holiday time, so a special feature on today's broadcast. 10 ways to stuff your turkey for under $5. No, newspaper is not one of them. That's on the $3. Now, that's bad planning. We have, okay, let's take it. We have a call on the Newsmaker line, and of course, we always go to those first, so a special feature will come a little bit later. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Sherry.
Oh, I recognize that voice. Shab-shab, yes. Am I correct?
Yes, of course you're correct. Who else would it be?
Well,
yes, of course, Mr. Sherry. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you,
Shab-shab.
It's been a while since we've spoken. Of course, you first came to our attention as one of Saddam Hussein's more than 30 lookalikes.
That's correct.
And you've had some travail since then. How are things going?
Ups and downs, Mr. Sherry. Yeah. I've had some ups and downs. But,
sure.
You know, the surge is working.
Really?
Because I got food.
Mm-hmm.
I got water.
Yes, sir.
Electricity 2 hours a day, Mr. Sherry.
Wow.
So for the high-end stereo systems that I still sell
really?
Out of my bedroom,
oh, right.
2 hours a day, I can demonstrate the sound quality.
The fine sound quality of of the equipment.
Yes.
Well, I guess that's good news. You don't have electricity more than 2 hours a day?
Not every 2 hours, every day.
Uh-huh.
It's like an average of the days.
Uh-huh.
It depends on the day.
Well, ask a question, get three answers. I guess that's fair. So what's new with you since the last time we spoke, Shab-shab?
Mr. Sherry, mm-hmm. I'm facing an important decision point. I guess you call it a tipping point.
Tipping point.
Tipping point,
tipping
something
point.
Like that
mm-hmm.
in my life.
Yes.
And the reason I'm calling you is I respect you. I respect your wisdom.
Thank
I respect
you.
Your judgment.
Thank you.
And I have your number.
Well, 2 out of 3 is good.
Yes.
So our phone line is your Shab-shab. What is the question?
Mr. Sherry, mm-hmm. you know that I never had any cosmetic work done to look to resemble the late leader Saddam Hussein.
No.
That was the work of Allah
mm-hmm.
himself.
Right.
That was a gift. Positive or negative to me, depending on the timing of my appearances.
Mm-hmm.
And still, to this day,
yes.
A bit, not what I expected, the large-scale Saddam nostalgia.
No.
But from time to time, yes, the birthday party,
mm-hmm.
the gag, honeymoon dinner. Oh, look, honey, Saddam Hussein is in the hotel room. Because, you know, that sort of thing.
Yes.
It's okay living, not
mm-hmm.
a good living.
Okay.
Okay living
good.
Keeps me in diet water, as you would.
Yeah.
But a friend of a friend
yes.
is a cosmetic surgeon.
Ah.
He has proposed to me
mm-hmm.
that I have surgery to resemble Maliki.
Mm.
And I'm trying to decide, do I do this? Do I not do this? What do I do?
Yeah, I can see the dilemma. Is there a demand for lookalikes? I mean, does he need them for security purposes?
Mr. Sherry,
mm-hmm.
you know there's elections coming up soon. We
yes.
don't know when, but
mm-hmm.
we know they're coming up. You put together the dots. You tell me, does not he need certain appearances was all that's required? This, oh, Prime Minister, here he is. He shakes hands.
Mm-hmm.
He smiles.
Mm-hmm.
He leaves.
Yes.
He speeds away.
Yes.
That should be a lookalike
mm-hmm.
if he wants to, you know, live to see the second term.
Right.
So I fondly believe this is true.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, and sir, you must believe me, after all this time, you know, I'm not a religious man,
mm-hmm.
but still, the gift.
Yes.
This is from Allah.
Okay, I see the point.
Mm.
What about the possibility that Prime Minister Maliki doesn't win the next election? aren't you kind of stuck?
Mr. Sherry, please. Mm-hmm. When we say election,
mm-hmm.
We mean election in the Iraqi sense of the word. In other words, the same people, but with larger vote count.
All right, let me just... I'm trying to understand, aside from if the prime minister loses the downside, of course, if you know, out of respect for the work of Allah in giving you this gift,
yes, sir,
of looking like Saddam Hussein,
yes,
you could continue your lifestyle selling high-end stereo equipment out of your bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
But you're looking...
Mr. Scherer, the point is this.
Yes.
There may any day be this surge of Saddam nostalgia.
Ah.
And then where am I? I'm looking like the new man, but they want to see the old man.
Yes.
And the new man may be years before he becomes the old man.
Yeah.
And in the meantime...
You're the new man.
I had what I wanted, and I got rid of it to get what I wanted then later.
Later than you wanted it.
No.
So... What are the chances of that? I mean, in the wake of the surge, we understand here that the violence has gone down,
yes,
that
sir,
the walls have come down,
yes,
in certain,
sir,
neighborhoods,
yes,
that the business is returning to normal.
Sir, it is normal. Everything is back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
If 2006 was normal.
Ah.
But, yes, there is nostalgia for a time when women had jobs,
uh-huh,
and men had jobs.
Ah.
We all had jobs.
You all had jobs.
We didn't like our jobs. We didn't like our government, but we had the government and we had a job.
Mm.
So, yes, there is nostalgia, and we just feel that...
Who's we?
It could happen.
Shabshab, who's we?
My agent,
ah,
and I.
Yeah, okay.
He's Lebanese.
If you've got an agent,
yes,
why do you need my advice?
Sir, before I had my left testicle removed, I got a second opinion.
You got your left testicle removed?
Yes, sir.
Did you have to do that?
No, but I should have gotten a third opinion.
Oh.
Anyway, so I'm trying to just get a feeling for where the wise road is,
mm-hmm,
sir.
Mm-hmm.
And should I look like Prime Minister Maliki and look toward the nostalgia of the future?
Yes.
Or should I continue to look like Saddam Hussein and root for the nostalgia of the past? That is my question.
Well, he's going to do the surgery for free?
Mr. Scherer, I have great respect for your wisdom, but are you delusional, sir? Of course not.
No.
It will cost the equivalent of 1 3-tower KRK stereo speaker system,
mm-hmm,
with subwoofers and Dolby 5.1 surround.
As much as that. Now, how many of those do you sell?
I don't know. We haven't sold any yet.
All right. Well, they probably just need directions to your bedroom.
Yes, sir.
I would say save the money.
Mm-hmm.
Go with God's gift, Allah's gift, and continue looking like Saddam Hussein at least through the first 6 months of the Obama administration.
What does that have to do with it?
Just an arbitrary date. By the way, you haven't thought about having plastic surgery to look like Barack Obama.
No, sir. I congratulate you on this election, but, sir, I am an Iraqi,
yes,
and I would never look like anyone but an Iraqi, although a girlfriend I once had said she thought I looked like Omar Sharif.
A little bit? He said what?
He's an Egyptian.
An Egyptian, okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, Shabshab, that's my advice. I think we have to move along, but
yes,
have the How to Stuff a Turkey for $5 feature still coming up. But thanks for the call, and good luck with whoever you want to look like.
Thank you, Mr. Scherer, and thank you for the surge.
It's my pleasure. Shabshab on our Newsmaker line, ladies and gentlemen.
And now, news from outside the bubble. All British troops will be out of Iraq by the end of 2009. This just in from the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch. This is according to a senior Iraqi official, Muwafaq al-Rubai, the national security advisor, also said talks on a deal between Baghdad and London on the status of Britain's remaining troops had begun and would be relatively straightforward compared with the agreement they're haggling on with the United States. By the end of next year, there will be no British troops in Iraq, al-Rubai confirmed to the Times of London. Negotiations on the pullout started 2 weeks ago, he said. In response, the British Ministry of Defense denied there was a fixed schedule for withdrawal. At the minute, we have no timetable, the British official said. At the minute. Nice work. We are hopefully making progress. We have made progress, and we are on course to meet the Prime Minister's fundamental change of mission in 2009. At the minute, we have no timetable. But ask us next minute. From the Independent newspaper in London, for the first time in history, some of the most famous sights in Venice
Italy are swathed in huge advertisements on the Piazzetto of San Marco. The villain of the new James Bond film looms from a huge advertisement for Swatch. The facade of the Doge's palace is obscured by mammoth ads for Lancia cars. Lancia. The new arrivals have come on the back of a recent law that permits the scaffolding of public buildings under restoration to be covered with ads as long as the local authority considers that they do not detract from the appearance, decorum, or public enjoyment of the building. You can't do that. According to Anna Summers Cox of the Venice in Peril Fund, the agencies letting out these sites are set to make huge sums of money. In the past, there was never any advertising in Venice except for election posters or small ads for concerts. But now they've realized that Venice is a fantastic place to rent out space. A few years ago, Piaget sponsored the restoration of the clock tower, and they put witty images of famous towers on the scaffolding, along with discreet ads for Piaget. That was reasonable because they'd paid for the restoration. Now the people putting up the ads are not the people putting up the money for the restorations. They are not kindly sweet benefactors, she says. It's a straightforward commercial operation. A firm called Placative Media is paying about $3.5 million to restore a museum, the museum end of the piazza. In return, gets 2,500 square feet of advertising space, half the size of an Olympic swimming pool, on that scaffolding. The standard rent for the site is 50,000 euros a month, rising to 75,000 in February carnival time. And it rises, it triples with a minimum of 12 months when the advertising space goes digital. Just don't let Clear Channel run it. They'll keep me off. Renata Codello, the Venice superintendent whose permission is required for each ad, says she's turned down masses of proposals, including one for the entire Italian football team dressed only in shorts. She argued she has no choice but to accept ads. Funding from the culture ministry has been cut by more than 25%, so I can expect no help from the government. But the head of the Venice in Peril Fund says it would be much better to charge tourists for entering Venice and keep it intact rather than make it hideous for everybody. Well, or not. Hideous for everybody is a choice. But wait, there's more. One of the Pentagon's top policymakers warned Thursday of this week that a surge of U.S. troops to Afghanistan, like the one executed in Iraq, doesn't recognize the complexities of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda-sponsored violence there and could backfire. This is from DefenseTech.com. Not seen in your area. Eric Edelman, the Pentagon's top civilian policy advisor to the Defense Secretary Gates, said the situation in Afghanistan is far different from the one faced by U.S. troops in Iraq. We shouldn't just focus on the numbers of forces, he says. But he also says the success of the surge in Iraq was less a function of the increased numbers. It was what they were doing that mattered. The single-minded focus on what's the level of force is wrong-headed because there are a number of elements that go into it and there's no magic number. The Pentagon, he says, has already executed what he called a silent surge of about 30,000 U.S. and NATO troops into Afghanistan 2 years ago. But the scale of the insurgency began to outpace even the steps we had taken. Iraq has a well-educated population, an oil-based economy, and is mainly urban. Afghanistan, he points out, is one of the poorest nations in the world. Illiteracy reaches close to 50% for males, and per capita wages close to 50% of those in Haiti. Do you know that? Afghanistan's per capita wages are half those in Haiti? Stop growing those poppies. Do something else for money, like nothing. Edelman blamed Pakistan's previous regime, led by the PERV, for negotiating a series of ceasefires that allowed the Taliban and Al-Qaeda sympathizers to regroup and pour militants into the fight across the Afghan border. Really? Are they there? I'll have to ask the CIA head. He might know. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, from outside the bubble, from the Telegraph newspaper in London, the Chinese Ministry of Culture wants to outlaw the widespread practice during live performances of lip-syncing. This comes 3 months after many Chinese were outraged to discover that one of the stars of the opening ceremony of the Beijing Olympics had been miming rather than singing during that spectacular show. There was an outpouring of anger following the revelation that child star Lin Miaouk, had been miming when she sang Ode to the Motherland. The cute 9-year-old's performance captured the hearts of the Chinese until organizers admitted she had been lip-syncing. Now the Ministry of Culture plans to name and shame performers caught lip-syncing. Those who are caught miming twice will have their performing licenses revoked, according to proposed new legislation. Says an official with the Ministry of Culture, people who perform for profit should not cheat audiences with fake singing or by pretending to play instruments. Lip-syncing has long been common in China. One Chinese pop star claimed that less than 20% of singers actually sang when performing live. She said, I once met a well-known singer at a show who didn't even recognize his song was playing because it had been so long since he performed it live. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Just a couple other elements about our good friend Pakistan. It said Thursday the United States was violating international law by launching missile attacks on its northwest tribal region. That should take care of us. And economic conditions bad in the United States and Europe, far worse in developing countries such as Pakistan. Some analysts warn a prolonged economic crisis could trigger a period of widespread unrest that could strengthen the hand of extremists and threaten Pakistan's democratically elected government with potentially grave consequences for the region and perhaps the planet. Have a great rest of your weekend, won't you? Don't breathe that ash. That's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin on the newly merged XM Sirius satellite radio. Growing, its chief bragged this week, because they laid off 20% of their employees. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshear.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free free download to members at www.audible.com/leshow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like learning ethics from the Emanuel brothers, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as an ash-covered home of the homeless.